Good morning, good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. Shortly with us, Abe Proctor. We are going to have a sensational show today. We can't help it. I mean, how can it not be sensational? It's going to be, what are we going to call it? Let's call it Down in Plames. Yeah, let's talk about the plame business. Let's talk about Judith Miller. Let's talk about the conspiracy to get us into war in Iraq. And let's talk about what we're going to do something about it. We also might have some time to look at, I can hardly believe it, to look at Harriet Myers, the most, how should I put this, unexciting candidate for Supreme Court ever, one of George Bush's many mommies. Yeah, we're going to look at both those issues, and we're going to hear from you, because it is talk radio, 231-8187. Ooh, where to begin? Well, the New York Times clearly emerges from all of this stuff about Miller as, well, a propagandist for the war. And the fact that they allowed the likes of Judith Miller to dominate their coverage of the lead up to the war, that they did not at all question her facts or her sources or anything, is so horrifying as to suggest the failure of the great and trusted New York Times. But there is so much here to dig into. Some of the things we're going to talk about today are WHIG, that's WHIG, the White House Iraqi Group, which was founded in 2002, 7 months before the invasion of Iraq. We'll talk about how Karl Rove, his assistant Mr. Libby, Condoleezza Rice, Spinmeister Karen Hughes, and the other Spinmeister, Mary Madeline, along with the vice president and the president, all conspired to create the climate that led to the war in Iraq, how the war in Iraq was, from the very beginning, filled with ghosts and lies, distortions, untruths, and fiendish plans to destabilize the Middle East. We'll talk about the role of the CIA in the Middle East. We'll talk about ghost companies, phony companies. We'll talk about the whole unraveling of the relationship between Iraqi and Iranian and Saudi oil interests, the role of the CIA with the Saudis and the American oil companies, the role that Cheney plays in all of that. Anyone who tells you that the war in Iraq was not principally about oil simply is not willing to look at the facts. This is something we knew, and now we really know it. And we'll talk about WINPAC. WINPAC, the CIA organization, Weapons, Intelligence, Non-Proliferation, and Arms Control, the unit within the CIA that, among other things, analyzes the spread of unconventional weapons, and the fact that Mr. Wilson, remember Mr. Wilson, we'll talk about Mr. Wilson, Mr. Wilson's wife was working for them. That's Valerie Plame, to those of you not remembering all of this. And Abe and I will trace the entire history of these events and show you how significant they really are. And then we're going to speculate about how this administration will, if indeed it can, hold it together in the face of revelations of what amount to, and I'm going to say this because it's true, treason. When you deliberately lie to the American people, when you deliberately distort the facts, when you deliberately bring American soldiers into harm's way, when you in fact equip them with inadequate equipment, and when you set up a war that cannot be won, just so you can further political ambitions and financial ambitions, what do you call it? I think you call it treason.
Yeah, you might call it that.
Let's call it treason.
I'm here, man.
I'm glad you're here. I was all caught
in the ebb and the flow out there, you know?
You got caught in the ebb and flow?
I did.
Ebb and flow, you know, that's a famous artist.
Is it?
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Ebb and flow.
Oh, yeah, well,
okay.
That's where I was.
Anyway, here you are.
Ebbing and flowing.
So you're a fact man.
Yeah, I've been
immersed in this stuff.
I have been.
I bought the New York Times. I read all of their stuff.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of it.
And then I went online and I got a lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
I know a lot of stuff, but you know more stuff.
It's a tangled web, man.
Let's untangle some of this web. You probably have it all prepared in some order, but I really want to start with what was the CIA front organization and that whole thing?
Brewster Jennings.
Brewster Jennings. I couldn't remember that name.
Brewster Jennings Corporation was the CIA front for which Valerie Plame ostensibly worked.
And her husband is?
Joseph Wilson, former ambassador to Gabon.
Okay, Gabon.
Gabon. He's the guy. Have you brought everybody up to speed on what this investigation is about?
No, I haven't even started.
Okay, we're going to recap quickly.
Okay, why don't you recap?
Okay. Cast your minds back.
Back.
Gentle listeners, before the war. Early 2003, late 2002. All right? The administration's raising this boogeyman out of the Middle East, Saddam Hussein, armed to the teeth with chemicals and biological agents and maybe a nuclear bomb.
Nuclear bomb.
Yep. So they're trying to build a case to go to war based on the fact that this guy's got weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Part of this case revolves around Saddam seeking uranium in Africa.
Yellow cake
uranium. So Joe Wilson, former ambassador to Gabon, is sent by Dick Cheney, no less, to Africa to ascertain whether or not this is true. He came back saying, no, it's not true.
Now, I guess he was supposed to come back saying it was true, whether it's true or not.
He was supposed to come back saying it was true, whether it was or not.
Yeah.
He came back, said, no, it's not true. The administration decides to go ahead with that claim anyway. It makes it into the president's State of the Union speech in January of 2000.
Well, in fact, the national security official, Stephen Hadley, is the guy who takes responsibility for putting it in the speech and keeping it in the speech.
Right. But as you were saying a few minutes ago, everybody conspired to create this atmosphere that brought us to war. Right. So Wilson writes an op-ed piece in the New York Times that says, I believe it was called What I Didn't Find in Africa. And he says, no, this isn't true. Saddam Hussein has been shopping for uranium in Africa. So in retaliation, the administration outed the identity of Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame.
P-L-A-M-E.
P-L-A-M-E.
Yeah. We were calling the show Down in Plames.
Down in Plames, indeed.
Okay.
She was an undercover operative for the Central Intelligence Agency.
And she was working for?
Brewster Jennings, a front company.
Now,
more about them in just a minute.
Okay.
Now, what's important about Valerie Plame is she was what they call a non-official cover operative, meaning that she did not. She could not rely upon the diplomatic protection of the United States of America if she was caught doing what she was doing. In other words, if she got caught, her life was forfeit.
Wow.
And now, say what you will about the Central Intelligence Agency. They spend a lot of time and a lot of money getting these non-official cover operatives trained and into their positions so that they can operate freely and produce information.
Okay, where was she operating?
She was operating all over the place, in Africa and the Middle East. She was an energy consultant. Her cover was as an energy consultant for Brewster Jennings, itself an energy-related company. Now, Brewster Jennings, it gets kind of interesting. Brewster Jennings was tied to the energy sector, as I mentioned, the oil sector in particular, and the Saudi-owned Arabian American Oil Company. Or Aramco. Now, Aramco, simply put, is the largest producer of petroleum in the world. It is essentially the state-owned oil company of Saudi Arabia. Its official name, the Arabian American Oil Company. This is a company formed out of the deal in 1933 when American and British interests decided to essentially enshrine the House of Saud in power in Saudi Arabia, in turn for long-term access to their oil. And this is the company they founded to do it.
So this is the company.
The company, yeah. Yeah. So Brewster Jennings.
Oil.
Yes. Brewster Jennings was in on the founding of Aramco and was a CIA front from the very beginning, although it wasn't called the CIA back then. So this was the United States government's intelligence apparatus in and around the Middle Eastern oil industry. So this was how we were keeping an eye on what was going on in the area. So this is, you would wonder why the Bush administration in outing Valerie Plame, as soon as she was outed, sealed the fate of Brewster Jennings. Everybody in the company was now known to be affiliated with the CIA. every contact with whom Plame and her associates worked was now revealed to be working with the Central Intelligence Agency. And I would lay money on the fact that when her name was outed by the White House, that a whole bunch of people died.
Died?
Died.
Well, discredited, maybe. Died?
Quite possibly died, Joe. These are non-official cover operatives, lots of them, working for Brewster Jennings, whose lives were now forfeit.
Well, we actually have a smoking gun. We have Judith Miller saying that her notes contain in the conversations with Libby at that breakfast. I'm quoting now from Judith Miller. Our conversation also turned to Mr. Wilson's wife. My notes contain a phrase inside parenthesis. Wife works at WINPAC. Mr. Fitzgerald asked what that meant. WINPAC stood for Weapons Intelligence, Nonproliferation, and Arms Control. It's the name of a unit within the CIA that, among other things, analyzes the spread of unconventional weapons. And WINPAC is the part of the CIA that essentially was the agency behind the Front Corporation. The Front Corporation, Brewster Jennings.
Right.
So here it is. Here it is. Here's the administration deciding to cut out an element of the CIA that could contradict their arguments for this war.
Precisely. Yeah, to discredit it entirely.
Now,
in fact, to simply remove it from operation. Once the cover of a front organization like this is blown, it's done. It can no longer operate in an intelligence gathering capacity. Period.
Now what about Wilson himself?
Wilson himself was actually held in pretty high regard in diplomatic circles, particularly because I'm not sure of his official title, but in the lead up to the first Iraq War in 1990-1991, he was some sort of attaché, some sort of diplomat in Baghdad with the American legation there. And apparently stared down Saddam Hussein in the days leading up to the war, secured the safe egress of the American legation and other Western legations from Baghdad before the commencement of hostilities.
So Joe Wilson's a kind of a hero.
Right, and for his toughness, he was lauded and officially commended by George Bush the Smarter.
George Bush the Smarter being Daddy.
Right, Daddy Bush.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Now, blowing the cover on Brewster Jennings, I mean, this was the loss of a major, major intelligence asset. And apparently, as you just mentioned, the advantages the administration saw in having a clear path to war outweighed maintaining this incredibly valuable asset.
This long-time asset.
Long-time asset. And, you know, if the big game is really about securing petro resources as they dwindle, as it appears to be, then it's hard to justify this.
Wow.
I mean, these neocons, you know, they saw what they wanted and they went for it and they were willing to, as I mentioned, sell people down the river into possible death.
You know, I wonder if the larger community of the neoconservatives and not to mention the right-wing Christian fundamentalists aren't going to want to disengage themselves from the Bush people, because now the Bush people stand as naked opportunists for their own political agenda. They're more like, in that sense, more like Hitler, you know, getting involved with the conservatives than they are like a part of a great conservative movement.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're just using the Christians.
Yeah, they are using the Christians. They're absolutely using
the
Christians.
Well, if I was a Christian fundamentalist, I'd get a little, you know, angry.
Yeah, I think they're starting
Jesus
to get a little
like
angry.
Jesus don't like no using.
No, he don't like no using.
Oh, really?
They're getting angry, but they still want their payoff. That's why they're up in arms about Harriet Myers right now, because
they don't know
if she's
going to
be the payoff. Yeah, we do.
But
we need to talk more about this.
Keep going, man. You're doing fine.
The person of Judith Miller, she emerges as, you know, a key player in all this, and it's interesting because her personality as a reporter and her personal ideology has literally shaped the course of this country's destiny over the last few years. It's astounding, really, exactly what's going on.
This is a woman in her late 50s.
She, along with some New York Times colleagues in 2001, about 8 months before the terrorist attacks, won a Pulitzer for some team reporting they did on Al-Qaeda's search for weapons of mass destruction.
So she had this good rep.
She had, well, yes and no. She was known as obsessive, as uber protective of her sources, as having a certain ideological bent. She was hard to control, her editors described her as. She was kind of a bully in the newsroom.
Do we know what her ideological bent was?
Yes, I'm going to get to that in just a moment.
Okay, don't mean to jump the gun.
That's quite all right. Apparently her colleagues in the Times newsroom didn't like her, and they have most noticeably not formed a united front behind her in her self-appointed role recently as a First Amendment martyr, which in my opinion she most assuredly is not. But anyway, she was an embedded reporter in this most recent Gulf War. You recall this?
Oh, yeah, embedded reporters.
Embedded reporting. This was a PR coup by the Pentagon, an absolute masterstroke. Here they took American reporters, and instead of turning them loose to report on the war as past reporters did, most notably in Vietnam, they were embedded with individual units. So therefore, the narrative becomes not about the war, its objectives, its causes, but about the troops themselves.
Human interest stories.
Human interest stories. It turned objective war reporting into rah-rah for our boys.
And
stuff.
How could it not? If you're sitting next to guys who are risking, or gals who are risking their lives, as a humane person, you're going to inevitably end up identifying with those people, and your objectivity is going to be blown.
Exactly. But Miller took it one step farther.
Yeah?
All right, this is from New York Magazine in the summer of 2004. Miller had helped negotiate her own embedding agreement with the Pentagon, an agreement so sensitive that, according to one Times editor, Rumsfeld himself signed off on it.
Wait. Rumsfeld signs off on the agreement to embed Miller where she wants to go?
Where she wants to go. And where did she want to go? A special unit looking for non-conventional weapons.
Whoa.
Yeah. This unit was called MET Alpha. As Miller covered MET Alpha, it became increasingly clear that she had ceased to respect the boundaries between being an observer and a participant. And as an embedded reporter, she went even further, several sources say. While traveling with MET Alpha, according to Pomeroy and one other witness, she wore a military uniform.
She's an agent in place for the Bush administration. That's what you're saying.
It's hard to say. I think her.
Well, who is she? What is she?
I don't know. She was a very headstrong, intrepid sort of reporter.
Very ambitious.
Very ambitious. Very dogged. But apparently very much personally invested in the war. I don't know that she was a pawn of the Bush administration, although this investigation seems to suggest as much. But she certainly had her own agenda at play.
So she was essentially invested in the idea that there were these weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
And she was invested in the idea that the war was warranted, therefore. And then no matter what evidence was turned up, she either didn't know or ignored that evidence and continued thrusting forward. I mean, the fact that she was in this unit looking for weapons of mass destruction, which they never found,
right,
indicates that she must have really thought there would be weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's a true believer.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's hard to say.
I don't like reporters that are true believers.
No.
I think that's a bad thing.
I think it should disqualify you as a reporter.
I don't like them on the left. I don't like them on the right. I don't like them in the center. I don't like them anywhere. I like cynical, hardworking, deep-delving investigative reporters.
Agreed. There aren't very many of them left.
No. It's an old tradition.
Okay. So we've talked a lot on the show about the absolute complicity of the mainstream media in laying the case for this war.
Well, the New York Times.
The New York Times, exactly. The New York Times, had it reported, had it actually done its duty, we may have never gotten into this war.
Wow.
That's a broad statement, but I think
let Miller lead them around by the nose.
They did. And here's, and in a rather extraordinary retraction, well, not a retraction, an apology, if you will, printed on May the 26th, 2004, the Times.
No, wait, let me remember, if you do, when do we start actually combat in?
March of 2003.
Okay.
All right.
That's in Iraq.
The Times comes forward and says, okay, we got it wrong leading up to the war. This apology is written by Bill Keller.
Who I know, by the way.
Whom you know.
Yeah.
It cites five different articles in the lead up to war that hyped the administration line on weapons of mass destruction.
How many of those were written by Miller?
Four of the five.
Now, but they didn't fire her.
No, they didn't fire her, nor did they mention her by name in the apology.
Nor did they even change her assignment.
Nor did they even change her assignment.
Whoa.
Yeah. So something's going on at the Times. There apparently wasn't a personality on the editorial side strong enough to deal with Miller.
Now, remember, they just replaced their managing editor a little bit before this because of the scandal of the African-American guy.
The Jason Blair fiasco. Which was, you know, shameful, to be sure, but small potatoes next to this stuff. So Miller, it's hard to say whether she's a stooge or not, but it certainly looks like it now. Maybe she wasn't a stooge when she was writing these stories, but she struck a deal with Fitzgerald only to talk about Scooter Libby as her source within the White House for Plame's name. And then she says she can't remember who it was that actually supplied her with Valerie Plame's name.
Oh, give us a break. But she wrote as Flame.
This is the woman who won a Pulitzer. And she can't remember who her source was.
Amazing. Do you know anything about the Arlington Group?
No, I don't.
All right, that's an umbrella group under Rove that is pushing, at the same time, is pushing for this war. The Arlington Group. Okay, another element of this.
Uh-huh.
I mean, so there's all these things going on at the same time. I want to make one more point. This grand jury is going to end at the end of this month, the one that's looking into Libby, et cetera.
Yep.
And probably will implicate, possibly will, if they have the courage to, implicate Rove, possibly even Cheney, but probably not.
Yeah, well, I think you can roll the dice on Rove. I think he'll be...
Indicted,
yeah.
Oh, I don't know. And they'll never get Cheney. But anyway...
Well, they can't. Cheney can be impeached.
Oh, right.
But not indicted.
Not indicted. I want to point out that when Ken Starr went after Bill Clinton for the soiled dress, etc.,
right,
that went on and on. That grand jury never ended. Now, why can't this grand jury go on and on and on? This is much, much more important than the stain, than the soiled dress, for goodness sake.
Well, one of the reasons that grand jury went on and on is because the media was behind it. Well, you know, every time Starr opened his mouth with some new allegation, it was echoed all through the radio, the television, the newspapers.
And Clinton was actually impeached. So a sex scandal with an intern, which has really no direct consequence for national security or the health of the government or the way in which the administration is managed, except to say that somebody let the little head do the big head's thinking, that nothing more than that, ends up occupying the press's time and the nation's time, while in fact American men and women and Iraqi citizens and all kinds of people are dying in a pointless war which can easily be investigated and which the grand jury is going to go away at the end of this month.
Right, and not only that, a major move has been made in a global chess game for dwindling petroleum resources.
And the American press is like, can't get it?
No, they can't get it. Or they're only now just getting it, and I got to say, it's probably in response to overwhelming public opinion. So the press is blown in the wind whichever way the public is leaning, which is not what the press is supposed to be doing.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, we're doing our analysis of what is inescapably the greatest scandal of the Iraq War.
Right.
And which reveals through the behavior of Judith Miller a programmatic effort to persuade the United States citizenry of the legitimacy of this war and to persuade everybody that it wasn't about oil when apparently it really was. I want to again point out the White House Iraqi group, or WIG, at its inception in August of 2002, 7 months before the invasion, was a group that met to persuade the American people of the legitimacy of the war, that this group included the PR spin masters, Karen Hughes and Mary Madeline, that it also included Mr. Rove, that it included Condoleezza Rice, Mr. Libby, who is the assistant, direct assistant to the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, that, in fact, it probably had meetings with the President of the United States and with the Vice President of the United States, that, in fact, the whole of the war was faked. And, and actually, you know, it brought down the career of the Secretary of State of that time. You realize that?
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who... probably in good faith, I think, goes into the UN and says there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He could have been president. He could have been the first African-American president of the United States.
He could have been.
But no. Yep. His career is destroyed. He's embarrassed. And then at the same time as this is going on, we have the administration punishing the Wilsons,
mm-hmm.
Joe and Valerie, Valerie Plame, her working name, who is, in fact, working at WMPAC, which is, in fact, the weapons intelligence, non-proliferation, and arms control element of the CIA under the front company of, what's it called?
Brewster Jennings.
Brewster Jennings, which is tied in very tightly with the Saudis and with the American oil company, Arab American oil company, Aramco.
Mm-hmm.
And who is Bush close to? Who does he hold hands with in photographs?
The Saudis.
The Saudis. Whoa! Come on!
Yep.
I mean, if they ain't conspiracies here, what is there? How gross. How dunderly. How incredibly. How can the press not go crazy on this? It's like a press wet dream.
It is.
I mean, where are they?
Well, it's not where
Where's
are
the
they?
Where's the front page of the Oregonian?
It's not where are they, it's who are they.
Ah.
Who are they are corporations.
Well,
owned by an ever-dwindling number of hands who are major donors themselves to the Republicans.
Okay, now we're going to talk more
and
about
who are
this.
On board.
We're going to spend this most of this day, although I may do some Harriet Meyer stuff because I just can't believe that she's going to actually be on the Supreme Court.
She's more, I don't think
one of the Bush mommies, you know, with Condoleezza and Karen, the Bush mommies. They're just amazing. Anyway, I want to hear from you out there. The number to call is 231-8187. This is KBOO. I'm Joe Uris. That's Abe Proctor. This is Talk Radio. And we are going to spend this time with Down in Flames. Who do we got first? Let's go out to Steve. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Enjoying the program. Hey, I have a theory for you to consider. I just finished reading the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Prize, by Daniel Yergin.
Uh-huh.
And consider that...
Wait, what's that book about?
It's The Epic Quest for Oil, Money, and Power.
Okay.
Details, chronicles the history of the oil industry from Pennsylvania, 1850s, through the first Gulf War.
Uh-huh.
And it's a Pulitzer Prize-winning tome, and it's what's amazing in that book is people have been foretelling the imminent depletion of oil reserves worldwide for over 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
And every time this scarcity... mentality, it takes hold, the prices go up, and the industry benefits more than anyone. So consider a possibility. When we lost control of Saddam Hussein, and he was dumping oil onto the world market, and he had the ability to do that, prices were depressed, and the industry was desperate to do whatever they could to restrict supply. It's a possibility, and I know it's remote, maybe even hokey, but it's a possibility that controlling Saddam's reserves was a more effective way to limit supply of oil into the world market, create a crisis, and drive prices up than any other means. I'm just a student of history and economics here, but look at how much the industry benefits from high prices. Now, you can't let prices get too high, or you'll attract alternatives to the market and undermine your future interest. But you don't want prices too low. So securing oil supplies is not merely important. You have to actually control the supply, and if you can create crisis and especially a sense of scarcity worldwide, your industry is going to benefit from that perceived scarcity with ability to charge more at the pump.
You're absolutely right, and we're seeing it now. We are seeing record high prices at the pump, and also the industry reporting record profits. So clearly it's simply not a case of them passing along price increases to the consumer. This is opportunism on a grand scale. You're absolutely right.
So consider, again, it's not a matter of securing more supplies, but actually limiting the supply of oil so that you can drive price up. But we're a member of OPEC now, given that we control Iraq. And the Iraq's a member of OPEC, so it's just something to think about.
No, I appreciate the call, man. That's very interesting. You know, actually, one of the things that is happening, though, is that the solidarity of the American control of oil is at risk because what's happening in Venezuela? I mean, they have a democratically elected left-wing government.
Yeah.
You know, and that government is not playing ball with the United States. So that government, from the point of view of the U.S., has got to go.
Well, we already tried to overthrow that government.
Right.
In early 2001.
Right. Now, I don't understand why the American people, I mean, I know cable listeners care about this stuff, but I don't understand why the American people don't get upset.
The American people are starting to get upset.
The polls are bad for Bush.
I've seen polls, a couple polls now, putting his support in the 30% range.
Really?
And one poll put his support among African Americans at 2%.
Well, that's, you know.
2%.
Wow. That is very low.
Yeah.
You know, after the treatment of African Americans, of poor people in generally in the Gulf region.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, there's maybe another hurricane coming.
Yeah, I heard about that as well.
Yeah.
It's going to hit Florida today.
Really?
Today or tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay. I want to just take a break here to remind people that there's a couple of interesting things coming up that you want to do. First of all, there's the a public lecture by Phyllis Bennis, B-E-N-N-I-S, from the Institute for Policy Studies. She's a senior analyst there. And she was originally not going to come to Portland, but she is. She has an event this Thursday, Dual Occupations, Iraq and Palestine in Bush's Empire. It's a public lecture, and it's Thursday, the 20th, at 7 p.m. at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church at Southeast 12th and Pine. This is Bennis is a really respected person. She's really someone to catch. So if you're interested in that event, it's free. It's Thursday. It's 7 o'clock. It's at St. Francis of Assisi Church at 12th and Pine in the Southeast. And I really recommend that event. There's also a training for Portland Anti-Military Recruiters Coalition, which will take place October 22nd, that's Saturday, from 10 to 2 at Augustino Lutheran Church at 15th and Knott in Portland. These are important events. Also, the 6th Annual African American Home Buying Fair, Saturday, October 22nd at from 10 to 2:30. It's free to the public. It's at the Emmanuel Hospital Atrium. So this is an opportunity to figure out how to get a home if you're an African American in a market that's increasingly difficult to get into because of the expenses of things. But I just wanted to get those out.
All right.
So let me just get this straight for our down in Plames thing. We have a CIA operative and a whole corporation that's a front for the CIA,
yep,
totally discredited by Judith Miller at the behest of the administration.
Yep.
Deliberately,
yep,
to punish Plame's husband. Is that really true? Just,
yep,
to punish him?
Yep.
I think it's more than that. I think it's to take that CIA operation out because it was probably more accurate and not on board with the administration's agenda.
Yes, you're right about that. But it was also an attempt to send a very clear message to people who would oppose the Bush administration.
Joe Wilson, no matter whether you're a hero or not, if you oppose this administration,
yeah,
we will crush you through your wife.
Right. And moreover, anybody else who stands against us can expect similar treatment.
Ah. So it's like a fascist message.
Yeah, it is like a fascist message.
Look, right.
And it's been repeated. Look at all the major figures who have spoken against the war. Scott Ritter, the former United Nations Arms Inspector and U.S. Marine, was thoroughly slimed by the administration. Likewise, Michael Moore has been thoroughly slimed by the administration and hits its cohorts on talk radio. Likewise, the various prominent celebrities who have spoken against the war.
Well,
their M.O., Joe.
It's true. And in fact, McCain.
Senator
from Arizona, when he had the audacity to run against Bush in 2000, was slimed.
Yeah.
And the list of resignations, by the way, in the administration, which I didn't bring with me today, but I'll bring next time, is horrendous. Almost anyone with any principles at all seems to be leaving.
Yep.
So that leaves just the Slimers.
Just the Slimers. Just political cronies who now occupy positions of enormous responsibility, like the head of FEMA or the head of Homeland Security.
Or, and this is really important, the guy who's in charge of making sure that the Asian bird flu gets taken care of in the United States. That position, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's never worked in public health. Had no experience whatsoever. He's just a crony of Bush's. And this is a real potential epidemic.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't just that these guys are ideologically awful. It isn't just that they wage unnecessary war. It's that they are incompetent at what they do.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not just that we went to war in Iraq. It's that we went to war in Iraq incompetently on some dumbass theory of Rumsfeld's.
Yeah, but what did you expect? I mean, these are a bunch of people who believe government's good for nothing but providing military defense for adventurous capitalism.
These are also a bunch of people who never served in the military,
no,
by and large.
So if that's all the government is good for, why not also use it to enrich your crony friends?
It's incredible. It's incredible. I think everybody within the sound of our voices should be talking this up in all the communities they're in. This is not a left-right issue. This is an issue of the survival of the United States as a democracy itself. This is an issue that goes beyond even that. This is an issue of the survival and the health of the world.
It is.
This is really real.
There's no doubt about it.
Are we going to get in trouble for saying that?
Possibly.
Will they disappear us?
I don't know. If we disappear, you all will know what happened.
Yeah, we go to Gitmo. I don't think we're important enough to Gitmoization.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not. All right. Hey, you know, it's funny that you should speculate on these things. So, WIG, the White House Iraqi group planning the war, planning to, not just the war, but planning the PR campaign to justify the war in August of 2002. And remember, what was the first line out of Cheney's mouth after the bombing of 9/11?
I don't know what.
Now we can turn our attention. I can't remember the exact words. Now we can do the thing in Iraq.
Yeah, and that was Rumsfeld wrote a memo just a few hours after the attacks that said, basically the same thing. Now's our chance. Sweep everything up, he said. Things related and not. Go large, right.
Yep. Go large. All right, 231-8187 is the number to call. I'm sure a lot of you have questions or comments. I want to hear from some people who absolutely don't agree with our analysis, if there are any. Who we got?
Ruth.
Ruth.
Good morning, Ruth.
Blessings and peace. I would like to run away to the farm community in Tennessee to get away from all this mental unhealth. I don't have the privilege. But anyway, in the meantime, I wanted to ask anyone this. Judith Mill, you were rolling off a lot of unpleasant personal characteristics or something like that. And I'm wondering this, and this is probably not popular or thinking, but I'm just wondering that maybe she was behaving that way because of the patriarchy and the sexism in the journalistic field or at a workplace. And also, the thought entered my mind, it's probably not going to help matters any, fascism. Is one of the roots of fascism, yeah, I got TMJ, folks, please bear with me.
One of the roots of fascism.
And the roots of fascism is patriarchy. Anyway, onward and forward.
All right, thanks for the call.
Yeah, there might be something to that.
Nah, I don't go for that.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, you know.
This is an ambitious person. Never mind that she's
a woman. She also, I think those characteristics, any successful, truly hard-nosed reporter is going to be obsessive, very protective of sources.
Really?
And probably a little prickly to deal with. I imagine, Cy Hirsch is a little bit that way, too.
I just think that it's, I think it's not in the interest of feminism to attribute her bad behavior to the fact that she's a woman. I think it's a very dangerous analysis.
Hmm.
You know, it's like the analysis of, it would be the same functional equivalent analysis of saying somebody was Jewish and therefore, or somebody was African-American and therefore. That's a very dangerous assumption. There are certainly many factors that make up a personality, and one's experience with discrimination is one of those. But I'm not buying that. Judith Miller is responsible for her behavior. She was an agent, and I believe a knowing agent of this administration.
Oh, I concur.
The New York Times was irresponsible in allowing this knowing agent to continue functioning in this role.
You know, I concur. But she's a woman in her late 50s. She's been a reporter all of her professional life. And perhaps when she started out, some of her ambition was she wanted to succeed in a male-dominated field.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but you're right. That doesn't excuse her behavior nor her use as a pawn in this whole.
And I go beyond that. I think individuals must take, if there's going to be any way that we're going to hold people responsible, we must hold them responsible for what they do, regardless of the circumstances that produce them.
Yeah, she made her choices and she's responsible for it.
Existentially, she's guilty.
Yeah, she is.
I mean, really.
Yeah, and so are those that she enabled. So are those that she's protecting.
Right.
Which all signs point to Cheney right now. Apparently, Fitzgerald's recent lines of questioning have been along the lines of, what did the vice president know and when did he know it?
Okay, Fitzgerald, just in case people aren't sure, is the special prosecutor in this case. Oddly, this grand jury is scheduled to end at the end of this month, when it looks like it could be, if it was kept as long as the runaway grand jury under Ken Starr, a lot could be revealed.
I think Fitzgerald's largely he has what he needs.
You think so?
Yeah, Rove just went back last week to testify again.
Fourth time.
Miller just went back to testify again.
What would Bush do without Rove? That Rove is Bush's brain.
Yeah, Rove is Bush's brain.
I mean, George Bush, the hood ornament, as actual president of the United States, is that better or worse?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's really scary. All right, 231-8187. Josh, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe. Earlier you were talking about Colin Powell, and I really do think he was a lot more complicit in the war than you think he was.
I think he was, too.
But you were making sort of semi-excuses for him, saying, oh, maybe he didn't know what he was saying to the UN, and maybe he did. And with Judith Miller, you're not really offering the same sort of leeway.
No.
Second, if I'm just two callers ago talked about Saddam Hussein lowering the price of oil. The reason that Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait is because Kuwait was paying attention to the United States demand to keep oil prices low, and Saddam Hussein couldn't afford to have oil as low as it was and keep his military budget as high as it was. It's not so much who's got the oil as much as who's making money off of the oil.
Yeah.
And Saddam Hussein, you know, even when he tried to sell some oil to do whatever he did with it, get some guns, buy some food and medicine, we even clamped down on him then. The reason that we installed the Shah in Iran was because of the same reason that's happening with what's going on in Venezuela right now. How dare they take charge of that oil when it's, you know, it's our oil. It's, you know, we're supposed to be making the money off it, not them.
Well, I think there are two contradictory, many contradictory forces at work in the oil market. One is that oil has to be at a price that maintains the military-industrial system. Okay, and that is a crucial thing. If oil rises too high, the economies of the West and elsewhere are really severely damaged. So that's one factor. The other factor is oil has to have high enough a price so that special interest with enormous power can get what it wants out of it. So the two are constantly in contradictory balance.
How would you say about the way that De Beers controlled the diamond market during apartheid?
Well, see, diamonds.
In order for them to keep the price of diamonds very high, they had to make people think there weren't a lot of them.
Well, and they also made a kind of a funny deal with the Soviets to keep the Soviet diamonds off the market. I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff about the diamond business. But one of the things about diamonds is, aside from industrial diamonds, which are available out of a lot of places, diamonds, which are not forever, are not crucial to the economy of the world. They're a made value. They're not a real value. Oil, because of the internal combustion engine and other aspects, is the petrochemical industry, is absolutely essential for the world's economies.
But as far as De Beers was concerned, and as far as South Africa was concerned, you know, if you look at it as a microeconomy, as opposed to the United States and, you know, let's say the travel industry.
Yeah.
It's, you know, one runs off of one thing, one runs off the other thing, controlling that resource. And controlling the cost of that resource is what keeps keeps people making money, and you know sort of limits it.
Well, it's certainly the diamond business is certainly a major part of the jewelry business.
Yeah. So essentially, saying manipulation of supply, deliberate
Correct.
Manipulation of supply has been a major factor in.
And that is what our administration is doing right now.
Yeah.
We are manipulating the resource worldwide, and it's costing lives and freedom.
Yeah, I agree with all that, as long as we don't forget that there really is a coming crisis in which we need to start converting our economic base away from petrochemicals.
Yeah, this isn't like diamonds. There is an actual shortage here.
There is. The crisis is not coming, guys. The crisis is here.
Yeah, okay, it is.
I think we can all agree on that. Let me give some others an opportunity, okay? All right.
Something he said, I got to elaborate on something for a
minute. Okay.
All right, we're talking about manipulation of the oil supply, control of the oil supply,
right?
Because somebody realized very early on in the Industrial Revolution that there needed to be a fuel to drive it all, and that was petroleum.
Right.
Right. And since then, the industrial capitalism has grown so large that it has to be sustained. So this loss of freedom and lives that the caller just mentioned are acceptable losses in the view of the people orchestrating this war right now. Right, industrial capitalism has become so large, in large part because we've been convinced that we need to keep buying stuff we really don't need. And that motor, that engine, has got to keep running. Otherwise, a whole lot of people are going to lose a whole lot of money. And that's where it is. So our role as consumers, is what I'm trying to get at here, is if we can decide that we don't really need all this stuff, then we can start shifting the balance of power the other direction.
Whoa.
That was pretty esoteric.
Well, a little esoteric. You want people to buy less stuff?
I want people to buy less stuff and decide what they really need.
We got so many calls lined up. I'm going to let that one lie.
Okay.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just letting it lie. Again, if you're just tuning in, we are down in flames. Talking about what may bring the, I doubt it personally, but, Abe thinks it'll happen, that may bring the Bush-Cheney-Rove-Libby thing down.
Well, in concert with some other stuff, too.
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on. There's an incredibly bad selection of this this Harriet Myers person, one of the mommies,
yeah,
the Bush mommies, to be a Supreme Court justice.
The whole pay-to-play lobbying machine built by Tom DeLay is under indictment now, too.
Ooh, okay, we got lots of calls, though. 231-8187 is the number to call. This is Talk Radio. Charlotte. Charlotte, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just had to respond to the call that was suggesting that the problem here was not Judith Miller, but was the patriarchy. And anyone who listened to Amy Goodman yesterday or who knows how Judith Miller describes herself as Miss Runamuck knows that she was out of control and had her own agenda and was doing what she wanted to in spite of what the people above her were telling her about what she should be doing. And not only was that the case, but there were, had been real questions about the quality of her work as an investigative reporter going way back. And 5 years ago, a number of her colleagues actually went to their bosses and said that they thought that she should be assigned to something else because she clearly had a political agenda and they did not trust the quality of the information that she was reporting. So this is a long history where there are serious problems with Ms. Runamuck. And So I just wanted to make that real clear and not confuse the issue with discussions about her as a woman or a patriarchy or anything. And I also know a lot about fascism, and I wouldn't want to confuse any discussion or understanding of fascism with that kind of stereotyping. You really have to pay attention to the details of the structure and the politics of fascism.
Okay,
anyway,
well,
that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
Sure.
All right. 231-8187 is the number to comment on this whole thing. Again, we are down in flames. We are looking at it. I mean, you know, actually, I just got handed a note by one of our
staff.
Yeah, I saw that. And it says, can you address how this situation is or is not the same as Woodward and Bernstein's protection of Deep Throat?
I'll explain that.
And I think
this
that's important.
The crux.
Why don't you go with that?
All right. Miller is painting herself as a First Amendment martyr, and the Times largely backed that position. And I think she probably conceives of herself that way, too. But this is not what protection of sources was about. Protection of sources was intended to protect people, who whistleblowers, who feared retaliation from those in power. The plame outing is a malicious leak by those in power and doesn't deserve protection from Judith Miller. Protection of sources was about the little guy, not about the big fish. And Lewis Libby, Cheney, everybody else in the White House Iraq group, those are not little fish. Those are the people in charge, and they don't deserve Judith Miller's protection.
Well, and beyond that, Judith Miller was always an insider with her sources. She always was trusted, and this is important, trusted by the administration as a way to feed, as a conduit to feed lies, as it turns out, to the American people through the most respected and most influential newspaper in the United States.
Yes. Woodward and Bernstein had sources coming forward to them about crimes being perpetrated by the White House at the time. This is totally the opposite. The source that Judith Miller is protecting was in the White House and committed a crime. So she's protecting a criminal here.
It is so creepy.
So creepy. That, you know, that is just a twisting of the First Amendment that the framers never envisioned when they imagined the role of a free press.
Really? Okay. Remember, again, the White House Iraq group, folks, planning the PR campaign to legitimize the war way before the war. Remember who's in that group. Pay attention to that. That's Rove. That's Libby. That's Rice. That's Hughes. That's Madeline. And that's probably the Vice President and President of the United States. You've got to pay attention to this. Also within that group, I almost forgot to say it, Stephen Hadley. who essentially sticks into the president's State of the Union address the fact, quote unquote, that the Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons of mass destruction. Incredible stuff. Incredible lies. You know, most Americans today think that Saddam Hussein represented a real danger, that he's directly connected with al-Qaeda, and that they had weapons of mass destruction. People still believe that.
Yeah,
what
they
damage
still do.
These people did.
And even those people don't believe it anymore, they still don't get... This is here's Ms. Miller herself. This is in the Times piece from Sunday. Ms. Miller said she was proud of her journalism career, including her work on al-Qaeda, biological warfare, and Islamic militancy, but she acknowledged serious flaws in her articles on Iraqi weapons. WMD... I got it totally wrong, she said. The analysts, the experts, and the journalists who covered them, we were all wrong. If your sources are wrong, you are wrong. I did the best job that I could. Why is it that only the administration and the journalists close to it, of all the people in the world who are following the lead-up to this war, why are they the only people who actually believed Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction? She didn't get it wrong because her sources were wrong. She got it wrong because she was being systematically lied to by the administration, and her own ideological agenda inclined her to support those lies.
The only way you can justify, and that's not a justification, the only way you can explain, I should say, her whole approach is that she was so after being the insider with the inside information and having the scoop that she never used her critical facilities. That's the most generous interpretation of her. The other interpretation of her is that she simply was... There were two other interpretations. She was a stooge for the administration all the time. The third interpretation is that she's part of the conspiracy itself.
Yep.
So the choices are she's an ambitious stupido, she's simply a stupido, or she's a deliberate and knowing partner in a great stupido endeavor.
She may have started out as just a stupido and become part of the conspiracy. And if she's protecting sources higher than Libby, then she is part of the conspiracy.
Yeah.
And she is clearly protecting sources higher than Libby.
Down in flames.
Yep. God, these people are crooks.
Crooks. All right,
sorry,
Angela, on that note, welcome to KBOO.
Oh, my God.
Okay, sorry to have to follow that.
Are you still there?
Yeah,
we're still.
Okay, I mean, you guys are, you know, academic, and you got big brains. You might think us Hollywood types don't have any kind of insight, and that I spend all my time just stealing other women's husbands and adopting starving, beautiful, beautiful black children. But I have a few things, too.
Is this Angelina Jolie?
Yes, it is.
Oh Angelina. Angelina, babe. Listen, love you. Love you, babe.
That's right. I know you do. But anyway.
What's with the razors, babe?
Oh, I don't know. I'm spaced out right now. But anyway, here's something that you two geniuses haven't touched upon yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Filipino guy from the Philippines who was close to the Clinton administration and remained on in the White House.
Who's that?
Next to Cheney. There's just been a brief mention of him. He has been sent home as a spy. He's a Cheney cohort.
Oh, this is the guy that was maybe spying for the Chinese?
Well, they haven't stated what other country he was spying for.
But he definitely was feeding the Philippine government information directly out of the White House, that guy?
Yeah, well, he was feeding the Philippine government, but also an additional other government. And what if he was feeding al-Qaeda? Maybe this is how bin Laden has stayed safe all this time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe Cheney was whispering things, and bin Laden can always stay 140 steps ahead of him. But anyway, that's another thing. But this whole thing about how the conservatives hate Bush's new selection for the Supreme Court is such a big, big act, because they know that she's Bush's handmaiden for fascism, and she's going to do anything her daddy says. And she just really is. I mean, the other thing that makes me suspicious about this girl is she wears her dresses awful short. She's got a homely face like a basset hound, but she's
got legs. Are you attacking her looks? You're attacking a woman's looks who's going to be on the Supreme Court? What is that?
Hey, I'm from Hollywood. We look at everything. She's got legs. The only thing she's got is legs, and that she's Bush's woman, and she's going to do anything he says, and the conservatives know that.
Hey, George Bush never had sex with that woman. Now, just remember that.
But he only has sex with Cheney. That's right.
That's a terrible thing. During the call, James Dobson had a call.
I know these things.
Did you know that on October 3rd, Dobson got this call? James Dobson, founder of the evangelical group Focus on the Family, two friends of Myers to speak about her, according to Fund. White House political guru Karl Rove suggested that we talk with these gentlemen because they can confirm specific reasons why Harriet Myers might be a better candidate than some of us think, Dobson said, according to notes cited by Fund as taken during the call by one participant.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, and they asked directly, whether or not she would favor overturning Roe v. Wade, and the answer was absolutely.
Of course.
So you may be right. It may be a put-up deal.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's enough from Hollywood.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
My
bye-bye.
Source on that is the Wall Street Journal, by the way.
Oh.
Can't get more reputable than that.
No, you can't.
So, in a way, I don't want to get into the Harriet Myers thing, but I think she may be a Trojan horse.
Oh, yeah, she was a Trojan horse, just like Roberts is a Trojan horse. Remember when Roberts was confirmed and I said Dobson gave him the thumbs up and that's why we should fear him?
Yes.
Okay, anybody Dobson gives the thumbs up to is going to vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. You heard it here first, and gentlemen.
All right, so essentially Myers argued when she lied when she said nobody knows how I would rule on Roe v. Wade.
Yes, she lied.
People did know. It is the columnist John Fund of the Wall Street Journal describes a call among 13 members of the Arlington Group. Remember I mentioned the Arlington? Mm-hmm. The Arlington Group, which he describes as an umbrella alliance of 60 religious conservative groups. They essentially talk with the administration. The administration reassures them that it's okay. It's okay. Dobson says it's okay. They're trying to calm this concern that this woman might be okay.
That's right. That she might not be an insane,
she might not be okay,
Bible-thumping right-winger.
But she is. She goes to the right church, and she's okay. And besides which, she's one of Bush's mommies.
It's almost like these guys are governing without the best interest of the people at heart.
Do you think?
It's almost like that. Yeah.
Unbelievable. You think they might be interested only in their personal agendas, like hiking profits on oil and running an empire and maybe introducing a kind of new patriotic fascism to America?
Let's not go
Could
too far.
Could that be there? Oh. I don't think so. 231-8187.
Who do we have, Eduardo?
Down in Plain.
Heather, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
This is actually the first time I've ever called a talk show before. So.
Hey, congratulations.
I was driving to work.
No pressure, no pressure.
Just had to call. My husband's actually in the service, and we're stationed overseas right now, over in Italy.
Uh-huh.
And, the night that Bush was elected the first time, Dan Rather said, "And the sun also rises." And I went to bed with that, and I cried. Because I knew that...
You're breaking up.
Hello?
Oh, we don't want to lose you, but you're breaking up. You must be on a cell phone as you're driving, huh?
Call us back, Heather.
Call us back, Heather.
We don't want your first time to end like that.
Yeah, it's just a cell phone,
You only have one first time, So you can have two. You can have two first times.
Smack you. 231-8187. Sean.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, listen, I had a couple of comments, a quick one in regards to Judith Miller.
Yes.
My feeling is, there's a very good possibility that she is part of this whole problem with what's going on right now, and I think some of it is also to help protect the New York Times, because you can't forget there's been a couple of episodes in recent past history of reporters who work for the New York Times who were actually working on behalf of the government to help promote their own agendas. And the most current one, and I can't remember his name, was a reporter who did work on behalf of the government to help promote their agenda on how great the atomic bombs were that were dropped on Japan during the war.
That was propaganda.
And I'm sorry, I can't remember a name, so I can't verify that, but I know it to be true because it's something that just came up on the news not too long ago.
So you're arguing that the New York Times is sort of the voice of the establishment, kind of?
Well, let's just say I don't trust the New York Times very much.
All right.
Okay. And I think if she's that far inside, then you have to question the validity of exactly what she's up to.
Well, it's very ironic. A lot of us use the New York Times because its coverage is whatever it is. It's better as print media than a lot of stuff.
But I would agree.
But on the other hand, there's more and more stuff from legitimate sources on the Internet now that turns out, when you check it out, to be accurate. I think the New York Times' crucial role is diminished by the more available alternative publications that are happening out there. And I also think that the New York Times, our assumptions about it may need to be challenged now.
Well, absolutely, and I think the fact is, like for myself, when I found that out about a reporter working from the New York Times, that far back, then it puts into question what exactly has been their role in many other things in America's history, let's say over just the last 50 years since that time. You know, when a paper has been compromised that much by the government on behalf of their own agenda to make it sound like dropping the bomb was a great thing,
really,
then that sets the whole thing into question from that point on.
Well, I think that one of the things that you see in the American press, whether it's the New York Times or the, forgive me, Oregonian, is a kind of establishmentarian orientation, so that instead of being critical and stepping outside of the system and actually analyzing things from a radical, and I don't mean left or right here, but a radical, which is fundamental perspective, the press in America buys into the assumptions of the government. And this has been true forever.
Right.
And because of that, a lot of misinformation goes down, if not outright lies.
Right. I think another good example of that is last night I happened to watch, there was a great program on OPB on American Experience. It was 2 days in October during the Vietnam War.
Yeah, that's a pretty good piece, actually.
Okay, right. Did you watch that?
Yeah.
And there was a good example of the manipulation of government using the media or manipulating the media to promote their agenda, and that was a massive lie over the ambush of these soldiers in Vietnam.
Yeah, who just happened to walk into a battalion
on
the roof.
Yes. I mean, you know, there were 150 guys. Almost half of them were wiped out, to 1,400 Vietnamese. But on the news, they put out that there were 1,500 Americans who ran into 2,500 Vietnamese, and it was an ambush. But they didn't call it an ambush and made it sound like it was a victory. So, I mean, of course, there's numerous examples of that kind of thing. And the whole idea is people need to question a lot more of the things that they read and hear, and need to somehow be able to back up the facts by doing some research.
Yeah,
but listen, I didn't mean to get away from the one other quick point I want to make.
Okay.
Is I wanted to thank you for making the point a little while ago about ultimately also what it comes down to is people's choices in terms of they have to start questioning what exactly they need in this world and the amount of things that people feel they need to buy and consume. I mean, that is a huge factor in this whole issue around oil, because almost everything that we buy, everything that we do and we're affected by in this world is made or manufactured by oil. And the bottom line is every dollar you spend to support a product that is made with petroleum just supports this whole agenda that's going on.
You want me to give up my iPod, don't you?
No, and the thing is, a good example of this is this whole thing that's happening with this bankruptcy law. I mean, this is another incredible scam, but what it brings home is the point that I heard the other day on another radio station talk show. Well, it was on Air America.
Mm-hmm.
Is this woman who was on, who has all the experience of talking about this in bankruptcy, and the great point that she brought out, most of these people filing for bankruptcy are not poor people. Most of these people, 2 out of 3, are actually middle-class people who have either lost their jobs and so forth, who are filing for bankruptcy.
Well, frequently it's because of health care costs.
Most of these people are mass consumers who, unfortunately, even though they've lost their job, have been in tight times. Part of their problem is they have bought into the propaganda system that promotes them buying way too much above and beyond of the things that they actually need. They've run up their credit card bills. They've bought everything, too many cars, too many everything.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when they get into a jam like this, they are forced into this kind of situation, which also is a great burden on the taxpayers because it costs a lot of money to fund all these bankruptcies. So it's a really ugly cycle, and I think there's a very great point to be made that people really need to start realizing that they only need exactly what they need.
Well, I partially agree with you, but I think if you look at the stats, the greatest number of those bankruptcies come out of the fact that people run into unexpected health care costs that they cannot cover, and the health care industry hands them over to bill collectors that are absolutely ruthless, and the only way people can respond to that is to declare bankruptcy.
Right, and okay, and that's a piece of it, but also there are the numerous, you know, examples of people who have numerous credit cards because they're bombarded on the TV.
Right.
I mean, I just saw the documentary about Sigmund Freud's nephew, who was the head of the PR system, which is the social engineering in this country that started back in the 20s, that teaches people to go out and get every credit card of every kind and bombard you on the TV to buy every single thing that they're showing you. And people run up tens of thousands of dollars of debt.
Okay.
On all of these cards.
Listen, I want to give others an opportunity.
Yeah, listen, so I appreciate the time. I just wanted to make that point. Thanks for the great
show. Thanks for the call. I got to tell people, coming up this morning on KABU, at 9, host Per Fehrgring has a special program featuring an extended interview with John Perkins, author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Perkins is a former respected member of the international banking community. I don't know if that means he used to be respected or he used to be in the banking community, but I guess you can listen and you'll find out. Could be both. He says he helped the U.S. cheat poor countries around the globe out of trillions of dollars by lending them more money than they could possibly repay and then taking over their economies. That's very interesting. At 10:30 on stage in studio, hear about Imago Theater's next production of Carol Churchill's Not Enough Oxygen. And later in the show, three women discuss their experiences with breast cancer. And at 11, it's Democracy Now!, my favorite KBOO show. Democracy Now! Featuring an excerpt from the recent debate between George Galloway, great guy,
I like that guy,
and Christopher Hitchens. Two blowhards go at it.
That's a great. I've already heard that some of that debate. Tune
it's
in.
Great.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's debate on the Iraqi invasion, Saddam Hussein, the Bush administration, Palestine, and so on. That ought to be hot. That ought to be really hot.
Yeah, two Brits going at it. Man.
Yeah.
If you like the English language, it's good stuff.
Oh, those guys are good. Anyway, that's it for that. But I want to remember to remind you that what we're doing is down in flames.
Yes.
Yes. We're talking about the betrayal of the CIA. The betrayal of the American people, the betrayal of everything good, decent, and honest in America by the Bush administration, and the role that Judith Myers, working for the New York Times, plays in all of this, and whether or not this is going to lead in some significant way to Cheney and Bush and Rove, and whether or not this might be the turning point that brings all of these phony balonies down.
I'll go one. I'll do you one better.
One better?
It's a betrayal of the Age of Enlightenment and the legacy of the Age of Reason.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Whoa. Can you betray an age?
Yes, you can. We're seeing it happen.
Okay, I want you to briefly just run through the case.
Oh, the Wilson plane case?
Yeah, just run through it again, because I want everyone to know it for sure.
Okay, we got a fake war, fake weapons of mass destruction. Former Ambassador Joe Wilson said, hey, there's, Saddam never tried to make a nuclear bomb.
And he was a hero in the first Gulf War.
He was a hero in the first Gulf War. He said the administration's lying. The administration retaliated by outing the identity of his wife, Valerie Plame, a super undercover secret agent woman for the CIA.
Who worked for
a front company called Brewster Jennings, which was part of Aramco, the Arabian American Oil Company, the Saudi National Oil Company.
Which has close ties to the Bushes.
Close ties to the Bushes. And moreover, was our principal source of intelligence in the Middle East.
And she was actually the subsidiary agency within the CIA that her company was was a front for, was the WINPAC, Weapons Intelligence Nonproliferation and Arms Control Organization.
Right. So outing a CIA agent is, in fact, a felony. And for the Bush administration, the effects were twofold. First, they sent a message to anyone who would dare oppose their march to war that they, too, would be personally slimed. And they were able to do away with the CIA's apparatus that was telling them that there weren't any weapons of mass destruction.
Also, that CIA apparatus could be feeding back into a loop which would reveal the relationship, and this is important, between this administration and the Saudis, and the whole oil industry.
Indeed. So the investigation was launched into who in the White House disclosed Valerie Plame's identity to a number of reporters, among whom was Judith Miller from the New York Times. Also Robert Novak, the syndicated columnist, who first publicly revealed Plame's identity, and interestingly enough, hasn't appeared before the grand jury, and is still a free man. He's the guy I think somebody should go after. And why nobody has, I really can't explain.
Well, he's well-connected, you know.
He is well-connected. And so right now, Karl Rove has appeared before the grand jury.
Four times.
Louis Libby, Cheney's assistant. And
who was definitely a leak.
Yeah. Reports indicate that the prosecutor's line of questioning now is moving towards what did the vice president know and when did he know it?
See, I don't think they're going to get any of them.
Well,
I think they're
going to
close it without Rove, without Cheney. They're chickening out.
Fitzgerald got unusual latitude from a couple of federal judges to investigate Cheney's role in all this. And he did so by showing them evidence he said was too sensitive to be shown either to the public or to private attorneys involved.
Yeah, but what does his wife do?
I don't know. But what I'm getting at here is Fitzgerald has obtained permission from federal judges to look into what Cheney said during his unprecedented number of visits to CIA headquarters in the months leading up to the war. I don't know how many of you people remember this, but Cheney was shuttling back and forth to the CIA several times a week.
I do remember.
In the months leading up to the war. So the investigation has, in its scope, those activities as well.
You know, I'm, as you know, kind of inherently distrustful of vast conspiracy theories.
Yes.
And yet, this is the smoking gun, the mother of all conspiracies, where you bring American troops, men and women who have no choice in the matter, really. I mean, they volunteer for the armed forces, but they don't know they're going to have to do this, who are brought in to go to war, supposedly against the weapons of mass destruction, when in real fact, this is part of a larger political game being played by this administration to retain its power, to make sure it gets elected in 2004, and to get control of oil.
And it's larger than that, even.
Larger than that?
This is part of a major economic modal shift where power is leaving concentration in nation states and being reconcentrated in the hands of transnational corporations. This is an economic modal shift, something along the scale of the transition from feudalism to mercantile capitalism or from mercantile capitalism to industrial capitalism.
Wow.
We're moving from nation state-based industrial capitalism to transnational-based global capitalism. And this is part of that game.
All right, we do want to hear from you. 231-8187. George,
good morning. George.
Hello?
Hello, yeah. Good morning.
The lines got crossed. It isn't George, but that's fine. I'm on the air.
What's your name?
Jim.
Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Joe. Hey, Abe. The Valerie Plame thing, but... My take on it is that Wilson was just incidental. They were out to stop Valerie Plame and her organization at the CIA, who was looking for the people selling WMDs. Mostly, it was a sting operation. They would put out agents trying to buy WMDs and see who came to sell. They is this White House Iraq group. I'm surprised no one has noticed that spells WIG.
Yeah, we noticed.
Uh-huh. So it's the WIGs were out to stop the CIA and the cops, the good cops, and put them out of business. And then when Wilson came along, that was just icing on the cake that they were able to injure him by getting her. But he's incidental. They were out to stop the CIA from finding out that it's these Whigs who are selling the WMDs. There's further connections with drugs. They're selling illegal drugs and money laundering. That's documented on... And I'm glad, Joe, to see that you acknowledge the credibility of some of the websites. WayneMadsonReport.com. It's where I have read all these details of the WMDs and the drugs and the money laundering from the White House interests. See, it isn't actually the people in the White House. It's the ones manipulating them, although Cheney, I think, is right there.
Well, are you trying to suggest the White House is in the hard drug business?
I do believe these things, and I read them on WayneMadsonReport.com.
Okay.
So I don't need to repeat all of that because I'm just saying what I read. On the other topic you've been touching on, especially for you, Abe, with your sense of this, what do you call it, economic modal shift?
A modal shift, yeah.
I don't think it's going global because I think it's on... Mike Rupert's website, fromthewilderness.com, especially the last 3 or 4 days, his postings about the Delphi bankruptcy, and if they take General Motors down with him, he put a number on it. The material I read yesterday, but I think it was a couple of days old. Anyway, the headline is about Delphi, considering Delphi. Something on the order of $2 or $3 trillion. It takes down when Delphi goes down and when General Motors goes down, it takes down the pension funds of everybody. If you have a pension fund, it will be zero by January 1st. That's the suggestion.
Yeah, but a couple months ago, corporations were essentially given the go-ahead to bankrupt their employee pension funds when, was it United Airlines did it?
Well,
so precedent has been established.
And others, I think Northwest and Delta are playing in that water, too.
Well, one shift, I mean, I don't want to get into the question of the reliability of blogs or whatever, but one, some are reliable, some are not. One shift that is clearly taking place that we cannot argue about is that ordinary working people are being shafted in a serious way. Their pensions are being disappeared. All the advantages that capitalism allegedly created in modern times post-depression are now being disappeared systematically, and this administration is leading the charge to disappear them.
Capitalism didn't provide those advantages. The opposition to capitalism did. The labor movement did. Capitalism left to its own devices.
I think it actually goes before the 30s. The paper I like is from 1910. It's a description of the Jekyll Island meeting in 1907 with Brown. You know them in the banking business today. What's it called? Brown Harriman or something like that.
Well, listen, we can't. We simply don't have the time to go off.
All
in that direction.
New territory. Don't want to do it. It's down in flames.
Yes, excellent phone call, and it brings up a very important question from the early part of that phone call.
Yes,
which was why exactly was the Bush administration willing to sacrifice such a valuable intelligence asset as Brewster Jennings?
Brewster Jennings was looking into business that would embarrass this administration.
Well, yes, that and Brewster Jennings being a big part of Aramco. I think the answer is, first, yes, what you said, that they were getting in the way of the war effort. And secondly, I think that they believed after the war that Brewster Jennings and Aramco would be irrelevant because we have troops on the ground and permanent bases in the region, and we are now the de facto controllers of all that oil.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that. I think that that's possibly part of their thinking. But you're suggesting a kind of insanity because it's It's so much better to have the front organizations of Aramco and the Saudis are independent.
In the new neocon world order, which is spelled out at the project for newamericancentury.org, newamericancentury.org, all that stuff is irrelevant. We are going to maintain hegemony by projection of force into vital regions of the world.
So we're going to be like the British Empire?
We're going to be like the British Empire, only we're not going to plant American flags. We are simply going to wield influence through puppet regimes.
The whole thing is so so open, so naked at this point. And the only arguments that we can have are almost technical ones.
Yeah.
See, I believe that the CIA was a potential rival to the administration.
Well, the CIA was telling the administration that it was wrong, that the intelligence didn't match what they were telling the public. That's why Cheney was bouncing back and forth between the White House and the CIA headquarters leading up to the war.
Right.
That's why Flame was outed. That's why Wilson was discredited. And why do you need a CIA front corporation in the Middle East if you've essentially taken over the region militarily?
And remember, folks, Joe Wilson was the guy who said there was no yellow cake uranium sale to Saddam Hussein.
Right.
And that's the key of that story.
That's the key of that story. That was the specter raised before the American people to get us, and I say us because most of us believed it, to get us behind the war. The mushroom cloud.
Yes, the mushroom cloud, which Rice, Condoleezza Rice, kept referring to the mushroom cloud. You know,
the president himself referred to.
You know, and it's really interesting. Joe Wilson is this hero who we destroyed. We've destroyed a lot of heroes. Who was the name of the guy who was a senator in the South? Who in Georgia, I think it was
Cleland, the triple amputee,
who was smeared as unpatriotic and as cowardly.
Yeah, they actually ran an ad. Where Cleland's face morphed into that of Osama bin Laden.
That's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
But here's a guy who just about gives everything you can give to his country, and he gets smeared. Well, same thing happened to Kerry, but in Kerry's case, it was more his fault.
Yeah.
But, what has happened to the... I mean, this is my profound comment.
It's a modal shift, man. Power doesn't reside with national governments anymore.
Yeah, see, I partially agree with you, but I think that the Bush administration is very fascistic, but it's also, I think, fundamentally in, it's like a rogue agency. It's out of control, and I believe that whether or not you're right about the modal shift, those with power are going to have to bring it under control, and that may actually mean bringing it down. Because, see, the Democrats are no problem to these people.
No,
and the Republicans normally are no problem to these people. But these people, these current Republicans, are crazy.
Yeah, they are crazy, but they're in charge, and they are an arm right now of global capitalism.
Well,
they
are
doing the will of transnational corporations.
We have to have an interesting argument on that sometime.
Okay.
Because I think I'm not sure. I'm not sure I disagree with you either, by the way. Let's go out to our next caller. 231-8187. Is it Paul?
Yes, it's Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So there's a couple of things that I think it's important for people to remember. There's been several things touched on today. One of the things that people touched on was what was the difference between now and Woodward and Bernstein with blah, blah, blah. Well, one of the big differences is who controls Congress. And it's been brought up over and over again that Bush has done all these impeachable offenses. Well, actually, it sounds like if you listen to around what's going on, is that memo that came off of the plane to get to Cheney and Scooter Libby, the only person that could have done that was George W. Bush. If he's the one that orchestrated this, and actually Stephanopoulos said so on ABC two or three weeks ago on one Sunday morning, that he had it from reliable sources that Cheney and Bush orchestrated the outing of the plane.
Yeah, he did say that.
Pardon?
Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah, and now, so what this is this is, we're getting beyond compromising an intelligence asset. We're getting to the point of treason, as in high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah, this is treason.
Yeah,
no, if it's true that Bush and Cheney did this,
it's
treason.
The important thing to remember about this is what was the difference between now and Watergate? Now, the main difference is who had control of Congress. Ergo, come 2006, they are going to pull out all the stops. You think they lied and cheated and stole in 2000, 2002, 2004? Everything's going to be on the table. George W. Bush being hauled off in handcuffs is going to be on the table in 2006.
Yeah, that's true.
People need to... Hey, talk to your friends and neighbors. Talk to your family members that don't quite agree with you and that don't understand and haven't been paying attention and don't see it. You know, show them the latest article that's coming out in The Nation. Show them whatever in concrete terms. But we have to be aware of this. And there'll be a meeting on the 30th of this month at the People's Food Store from 4 to 6 p.m. in their community meeting room, Northwest Progressive Community, and people will be talking about campaign finance reform and campaign dirty tricks. Some of the same people that put on the Voters' Rights Summit here a couple of weeks ago will be doing a presentation. But, yeah, people need to start paying attention to what's going on. And you're right, the Democrats haven't been running any opposition, but we the people need to take back control. You know, as people are running for city council and asking for your support for city council and representative for the primary races for the state, ask them, you know, how do they feel about war taxes? Ask them how do they feel about the First Amendment rights and what will they do as the city council? What will they do in the state legislature to maintain these constitutional safeguards? I think that what we're going towards is we're going back to feudalism. International form of feudalism where, you're right, the nation states will be irrelevant, but we're going to a feudalist state.
Okay, I want to give some other...
Yeah, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah. Again, we are making the point, whatever variant we're making, that this was a vast conspiracy by the president and the vice president and that government that is in power right now to lie to the American people, to bring us into a really badly designed war, to cost the lives of millions of people throughout the world potentially, certainly thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq, and American soldiers, men and women, who have done nothing wrong other than being patriotic citizens.
Right.
And it's time that we, all of us, whether we're left or right or center or indifferent, we need to unite to defeat this potentially absolutely fascist attempt to take over the United States.
The treason is a capital crime as defined by the framers, you know.
Well, I do know that.
If Bush is impeached for treason, he could be executed.
But you see, they control the voting machines. Right. They control the process. They have manipulated every state legislature. They are in a situation where it's going to be very hard to pry them loose, even with the American people absolutely opposed to them.
You know, the time is ripe for a nationally organized campaign around one issue, impeach. Elect me to Congress, and I will vote to impeach. That's what every candidate should say.
Whether they're Republicans or Democrats.
Yeah, whether...
Or whatever.
I don't know. I would mistrust any Republican running on that platform, to be honest.
All right. 231-8187. We got time for one or two callers?
Yep. Doug. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Boy, great program. Gosh, anything I would say at this point would be redundant and repetitive of what you guys have spoke about. You're all been right on so many points, and your callers have been wonderful and brought up so many points, and I totally agree. So I guess I'll rack the back of my brain here for something. Did you guys catch, there's a talk show host out of Austin. He interviewed Ron Paul last week. I actually heard the interview. I actually have it recorded.
No,
you guys,
didn't
know what I'm
that.
Talking about? You aware of that at all?
I know who Ron Paul is.
He spelled it out, what this administration is up to with the plan for martial law.
Yeah, he's a conservative.
In the states using bird flu.
Ron Paul's a conservative who's been speaking out against the administration.
Oh,
go ahead.
This is great. So can I give you guys, tell you where that website is?
Sure.
You can check it out. I'm not stumping for anybody. This is just, everybody needs to read what Ron Paul said.
Quick,
I mean, this is
quickly. What's
it's
the website?
Prisonplanet.tv.
Prisonplanet.tv.
Yes, sir. Prisonplanet.tv. There's an accompanying website, Infowars.com. Tons and tons
okay,
of information.
Ron Paul.
Okay.
Hey, thanks
for the call.
Thank you.
Whoa, keep it on. Keep it on, folks. We can do this. Remember, it's down in flames.
All right, we'll see you next week. Thank you.